So, hip hop, it's big business. It's got a huge impact on the culture, and it's been around for a long, long time. Doc Ice, when did you first get involved with hip hop?
Well, I got involved in hip hop back in the, I'll say the early 80s. When we kind of was hearing it, you know, just kind of trickle down through Brooklyn, through artists like Grandmaster Flowers, you know, one of the first DJs really doing hip-hop in Brooklyn, and then hearing about, you know, with Uptown and in the Bronx with Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, Cold Crush Four, so many artists back in the day. It just was a bug that bit us, and we just continued to, you know, look for it, hear it, and just kind of hone it, and it just turned out to be, you know, something more than all of us expected, but we knew it was big from where we came.
And continuing is right, the Doc Ice of Houdini and UTFO, his latest album is The Doctor Will See You Now. We're grateful that you would see us this morning, Doc Ice. Also with us is Doc Charnas, author of Big Payback, The History of the Business of Hip-Hop. It's a comprehensive study. He's in the studio. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking a little bit about the impact of hip-hop, but I was thinking, you know, in my own life, you know, at the risk of, you know, two white guys sitting around talking about hip-hop. Back in the day, you understand what I'm saying, Doc?
Yeah, no doubt.
There we go. Help us out here. But I remember in the old Danceteria days back in the 80s, I used to play badly for a band. We used to hear covers of like Run DMC or demo tapes of groups like Run DMC. And, you know, we'd sit around going, this stuff's great, but it doesn't have a chance. It's way too fringe. Right. What happened, Dan Charnas, to turn hip hop into something that was from fringe to being actually a huge business that transformed the entire music industry?
People had to fight. I mean, there was a lot of resistance at first. They just thought it was another fad like disco. And it took people like first Sylvia and Joe Robinson, and then people like Corey Robbins and Steve Plotnicki, who founded Profile Records. I know Doc Ice, remember Fred Mineo, who founded...
Come on, no doubt.
And, you know, it's funny because one of the stories I tell in the book is of UTFO's first record, which... the A side of the, you know, when singles used to have A sides,
right,
and B sides.
Yeah, sure.
Radio stations weren't really interested in the A side, and then there was a DJ in Virginia Beach who flipped it over to the B side, and that was what, Doc Ice?
That was Roxanne. Mm-hmm. And nice. And Dan, we got to give props to Red Alert, because he beefed with us through our manager, Steve Salem. And Steve Salem, you remember Steve, Dan, him and Russell, they shared cubicles before they opened hip-hop to what it is today. But Steve passed away, so I want to say, you know, bless his soul. But him and Red Alert went back and forth, because Steve was like, play the A side. Red said, no, it's the B side. Mm-hmm. He said, the A side said, no, it's the B side. And when they flipped that B side, it was the first soap opera of hip hop. And that's why it drew so much attention into the industry.
James, Doc Ice is talking about Russell Simmons there when he's referring to Russell, one of the seminal characters that transformed this into a business. You know, you may not know the names out there listening, but really, you know, way before Napster confronted the power of the record industry, these characters that you're talking about, Doc Ice, wanted to take the power of music away from these business corporate leaders and control it themselves. Russell Simmons was one of the first. Why did he think he could be successful?
Well, yes, and Doc or me?
Either one.
I mean, for Russ, you know, Russ was just a hustler. I mean, he fell in love with the music, with the scene, and he wanted to do anything he could to get it out there. And he started as a party promoter, then an artist manager, and then finally a record company called Def Jam, which he co-founded with a young college student at NYU named Rick Rubin. And it was that record company that really helped convince America, and including the corporate music business, that hip-hop was a viable commercial product.
You know, when I got started, Doc Ice, in radio, I can remember at WBEZ in Chicago listening to Run DMC come in and do one of these really boring interviews about the importance of education for young people.
Right.
And, you know, they were like, you know, not the top billing in the interview even. But, the message that they had back then was the content is the important piece of rap, and that's the power of it. Do you think as the business has grown, the money has supplanted the content in some sense, Doc Ice?
It definitely has. I think that when you look at, like, when I brief Dan's book, I just think that it's important that they get the sense of it, you know, the money sense of it and the understanding sense of, you know, when you let the money lead you into the business, then there's a problem. I mean, you know, we love music, and it should come from the heart. And when it comes from the heart, then it's more relatable. I mean, really keeping it real, everybody's talking about all of this bling and all of this money. Not many people can relate to it. So when you figure out why is it selling like that, it's crazy because we only should understand it, but they don't understand it. They only understand the money part of it, you know, and when they get that part of it, there's no value.
Right.
So now the music business has turned into the business of music. So I think that, you know, I have a song that on the album, The Doctor Will See You Now, called Crabs in a Barrel. And if you don't mind, I just want to say this one verse to y'all real quick. Can I do that?
Go ahead.
It says, you think that it only takes place at the top, but even when you drop, people want that little spot. See, fathers fight sons and mothers are fighting daughters. Even underground, the worms live by some orders. We're the lowest of the low, what they call bottom feeders, new hate breeders, feeding that poison into a fetus. It's facetious, leaves the doc speechless. You can't plant onions and expect to grow peaches. We got to reteach the teachers, cut loose the leeches. But when you hear change, that's when you hear the screeches. Tell your friends you went to college and got your degree. Look on their face, you'll see the envy. But tell them you went to jail, got locked up in the can. You get mad props like, yo, you the man. It's crazy out here, it's warped in the hood, because good means bad, and bad means good. So that's written
nice.
Because I believe that they have become crabs in the barrel. You know, when you look at the Jay-Z's and the Russell Simmons and the different people in those major positions, you can count on your hand how many people will be successful in that light. So it's a blessing to have a book like Dan's that speaks of, you got to remember that there were other people that had dreams that saw your dream and people that saw their dreams,
right.
And they connected, and that combination unlocked the lock, and that's how we were able to be successful. So when you try to do it all yourself, try to take all the money.
Gotcha. No, Doc, hold on 1 second. Doc Ice of Houdini and UTFO speaking to us from New York City, and that's a great rap. Yeah, I know, Dan Charnas, you didn't expect to get a word in edgewise on the same show with Doc Ice. What do you hope people get from this book?
Well, I mean, listen, I couldn't have said it better than him. Hip-hop has been treated in the media as you know, an American subculture, an American problem, an American menace.
Bigger than that. Dan Charnas is the author of Big Payback, The History of the Business of Hip Hop. We gotta go. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway. But joining us now is Jorge Ramos, who's an anchor for the Spanish language television network Univision and author of A Country for All, An Immigrant Manifesto. Jorge, good morning. You know, the reason we asked you on the program is because Congress has decided to proceed with the so-called DREAM Act, which would extend legal immigration to individuals who are under 30 years old, entered the country before they turned 16, have spent at least 5 years in the United States, have a high school degree, and have gone to college or have military service. Now, that sounds like a perfectly plausible path to some people for citizenship in the United States. The House, I believe, has passed this. It has absolutely no chance in the Senate. How does it make you feel that Congress is doing something that has almost no chance of passage?
Well, I think the House of Representatives did exactly the right thing, because we're talking about 2 million students who essentially feel American and who are really American. I mean, how would you feel if you're speeding, you're driving fast, then you get stopped and you get a ticket, but also your kids get a ticket? I mean, it wouldn't be fair, because you are responsible, but they are not responsible. We're talking about thousands of students who came here when they were only babies, when they were 4 or 5 years old, and who are not really they were not responsible for coming in illegally to this country. So I think the Senate, I really cannot understand why there is not a single Republican senator who would be willing today to vote for the DREAM Act. And that's going to be, it's going to have lots of political consequences. If Republicans do not vote for the DREAM Act this morning in the Senate, Hispanic voters will remember in 2 years. And if Republicans want to get the White House back, they won't be able to do it without the Hispanic vote.
Well, that's one possible political consequence. I would think another possible political consequence, Jorge Ramos, would be that it just reinforces a sense of cynicism. Whether a Republican or a Democrat is in the White House, Congress seems unified on one thing. They don't deal with immigration, period.
And that's exactly, you know, a few years ago, and we also about it a few months ago, there was a consensus that we needed immigration reform. It is incredible that the most powerful country in the world, the United States, would not treat 11 million people in a fair way. I mean, yes, they broke a law, but also thousands of Americans and thousands of American companies hired them. So we're also responsible for them coming to this country. We're doing nothing, absolutely nothing about that. And then on the other hand, I think there's a new sense that we don't have to do anything, that this attrition through enforcement works, and that Latinos and Hispanic undocumented immigrants would eventually go back to the country. It is right now, and as soon as the message goes to Latin America that this country is coming back economically, they'll be coming back. So we're going to have to do something about it. A solution is urgent, but we're doing nothing. So since we can't get immigration reform, the DREAM Act is what we call Plan B. But even Plan B is not working. I am an immigrant. I came to this in 1994, and this country has given me all the opportunities that my country of origin couldn't give me. But now I can't believe that this country is not doing exactly the same thing for other students like me.
We're talking with Jorge Ramos, anchor for the Spanish language television network Univision, speaking with us on some fairly sketchy cell phone infrastructure down in Miami, Florida. I got most of what you said there, Jorge. Before we go, what form politically would a sort of backlash take against Republicans who don't vote for the DREAM Act? Well, we'll just have to wait and see what that might be. Jorge Ramos there, we lost his line. Anchor for the Spanish language television network, Univision, talking about the DREAM Act, passed by the House, unlikely to pass through the Senate. It offers a path to citizenship for immigrants who have gone to college or have had military service.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.